When I was a college student living in Portland, Oregon, I drove this this old, tiny beater car, a Datsun 1200, a little tiny tin can. And it had a standard transmission, which means, if you don't know what that means, it means it had a clutch and you have to shift constantly. And I loved this little car. I absolutely loved this ugly old beater. The only problem was that I lived in Portland, Oregon, which is one of the hilliest cities that I've ever been in, literally built around a number of old extinct volcanoes and mounts. And so you're constantly going up and down large hills. And it also so happened that on my way to and from work, I had to go down and then on the way back up an extremely steep hill that ended at an intersection at which there was a stoplight. And regularly, I would be stuck on this steep hill with cars in front of me and cars behind me with my manual transmission and the clutch. And so you know what happened, don't you? I had to let out the clutch quickly and give it gas. And every time I did, the car would back up a few feet and then pull forward. And sometimes if there were cars turning right in front of me, I had to do that several times. Hit the clutch, back up a little bit, and then move forward a little more. Hit the clutch, back up a little bit, and then move forward a little bit more. Well, that's a little bit the way I feel about this series of sermons that I'm doing right now called Addiction and Grace. Each Sunday, just by the nature of the case, I need to back up a little bit and then hopefully move a little ways forward and then back up a little bit more and move forward a bit more. So allow me to start by backing up a little bit. We're speaking about addiction and grace. And each week I have suggested to you that one of the really important concepts in understanding the things that control us is something that I'm calling attachments, those things to which we are nailed. Remember, attachments are our desire, our longing, our homing device for God that becomes misplaced in other things. And so it can be any of a thousand different things that my longing for God gets misplaced and attached to something else. And remember, I've told you, the original meaning of the word attachment is nailed to. It's a powerful picture that here we are nailed to our desires that are directed in the wrong ways. I've suggested each Sunday that we are all addicts. And I'm hoping that by now you're beginning to name some of the things that control you. I've suggested on previous Sundays that if we walk out thinking about the attachments and addictions that somebody else has and we're diagnosing somebody else, we're completely missing it. That this will only be of any value if we have the courage to begin to think about and become aware of the things to which we are attached. And I've suggested to you that when our attachments become habitual, when we do them over and over and over again, we're in the process of addictions forming. Now, last Sunday morning, I spoke about five characteristics of addiction, and I can't return to all of those this morning because of time. I just encourage you to go back to our webpage and pull up last week's sermon if you have not heard those yet. This morning, I want to focus on one of the characteristics of addictions, and that characteristic is the failure of willpower. I wonder if you can appreciate this little character who's coming up on the screen right now. I'm not sure if this is a he or she surrounded by all kinds of very powerful temptations. One of the inclinations that we have when faced by our attachments and our addictions is to say, I will try harder. I'll do it again. If at first you don't succeed, try again, harder and harder and harder. And this morning, I want to speak briefly about why that doesn't work and why we have experienced that in so many different ways. I want to invite you to look with me this morning at the problem of willpower and the beauty of grace from the perspective of one of the most powerful and important memories of the church. I want to ask you to think with me this morning about the failure of one of our heroes. I want to ask you to reflect with me on the failure of Simon Peter. The failure is told in the story that I just read a moment ago from the Gospel of John. I think most of us here probably know this story. The story takes place at the end of the ministry of Jesus. The time has come when he has set his face toward the cross. He knows what is coming, and he is prepared for what is on its way. It is in this setting that Jesus says to the disciples, "Where I am going, you cannot come." It is his recognition that they simply are not ready to come with him to the cross. They're not able. And Simon Peter, ever and always willing to share his perspective, says, "Lord, where are you going? I will go anywhere with you." What I want to suggest to you this morning is that this is the story of willpower, or I'm going to call it willfulness. Simon Peter, full of willfulness and willpower and good intentions, says to Jesus, "I don't care where you're going or where it might lead you. I'm going to go with you all the way. I've got what it takes. I've got this fire burning in my soul, and I'm absolutely committed to going with you all of the way." And this is the response of Jesus to Simon Peter. I think actually I got these out of order. If you go ahead and go forward, this is the response of Jesus. "Will you really lay down your life for me, Peter? I tell you the truth, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." Simon Peter suffers from one of the most ancient maladies of the human race and one of the most ancient maladies of the Christian church. And it is the malady that I'm calling willfulness or strong-willedness. It reminds me of another story that is not from the Bible, about a different character. I suspect that you will remember this one. It is the story of the little engine that could. You remember the story. There are a lot of different versions of this, by the way. The version of the story that I grew up with was that the circus is on its way to town carrying all of the things needed for the circus. The larger engines are asked to carry all these goodies and all the cars that carry them to town, and they are not willing to do it. Finally, the little engine is asked if he'd be willing, and he says, you remember, "I think I can, I think I can, I think I can." And as he pulls up the mountain and it gets steeper, he says, "I think I can, I think I can, I think I can." And then as he goes over the lip of the mountain, he says, "I knew I could, I knew I could, I knew I could." And I love this story. I love this beautiful children's story. There are so many good things about this story. To be honest, I kind of think we love this story because it's our national story. We were the little engine that nobody in the world thought could. And against extraordinary challenges, this little tiny engine called the United States of America chugged up the hill and earned its independence. It's a wonderful story. And there is a lot of good to recommend itself to us in this beautiful story. But I also want to suggest to you that there's a real challenge and a deceptiveness in this little story. And here's the problem. The story of the little engine that could is the story of someone independent of God, in their own power and in their own will, saying, "I think I can do it. I think I can do it. I believe I can do it. I'm sure I can do it. I'm going to do it." And it's our story, isn't it? It's our story when we come up against the myriad addictions and attachments that have come into our lives to which we ourselves have been nailed. How many times have you said to yourself, "Today is the day that I'm going to go on a diet. I'm not going to overeat or eat the wrong things anymore. I'm finally done. I think I can. I think I can." No, I'm going to. I'm going to. I will. I will. I will. And then we get hungry and lonely and tired, and that ice cream comes to mind, and we think about how comforting it would be, and the next thing you know, we are nailed to our attachments over and over and over once more. I believe this is the story of Simon Peter, only it is a far more tragic story than ice cream or a children's story. I believe this is the story of Simon Peter. Simon Peter has extraordinary intentions. That's important to know. He's a good guy. That's important to know. He's one of the people that Jesus chose because of his openness and his willingness and his teachability. The problem with Simon Peter is he's convinced that he can do it. With clenched fists and clenched teeth, Simon Peter says, "I think I can. I think I can. I know I can. I know I can go with Jesus wherever he goes and wherever it takes. I wonder if any of you have done this, if you've ever done this. I am so committed that I can do anything that it takes. I'll go where I need to go. And we've just described Simon. The problem, of course, that we have, all of our problem, is that like Simon Peter, we are all of us double-minded. I wonder if you can relate to this little picture up here at all. I don't envy this guy his headache, by the way. I wonder if you can relate to him at all. Even as we're gathered here in worship this morning, you and I have different programs that are firing in our brains. One program that is firing in our brains says, I want to be free. I want to follow in the way of Jesus. I want the longings and desires of my hearts to be directed to God, the one true God, the living God who will fulfill and be the undergirding and empowerment of all of my life. We have this little computer program that is firing in our brains. But at the same time, we have other programs that are firing in our brains as well. Some of us have a program that's firing in our brains that says, if I'm not in control, if I'm not the one making the decisions and telling people what to do, I won't be happy. And the other program fires in our brain says, you know, really, I want to trust the Lord. I don't have to be in control all the time. But this little program fires in our brain says, yeah, but wait a minute. If I trust the Lord, then things are going to get really chaotic and I won't be in charge. Do you see? Allow your own attachments and addictions to come to mind right now. Overeating. People-pleasing, always trying to make the people around you happy, never sharing your opinion because you're afraid that others won't like you, doing whatever it takes to please the crowds. Allow whatever it is to which you're attached to come to your mind right now and picture the different programs that are firing in your mind. I want to trust the Lord and let my desires lead me to him. And yet, at the same time, all of these other programs are firing at the same time, and we are like Peter. Double-minded, willful, wanting to do it in our own independence and power, and having all of these different things firing at the very same time. I wonder if that sounds familiar to you. Friends, I believe that we have a major problem. I believe that we have an extraordinarily huge problem. I believe that we have a problem in that many of us, in fact, I'm going to go out and say all of us, have attachments and addictions that have been a part of our lives for our whole lives, or at least a major portion of them. And the power of these addictions is such that they rob us of the ability to be true to what we're called to be. They rob us of our ability to love the Lord our God with all of our heart and soul and mind, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. Can you picture some of yours right now? Can you picture some of the addictions in your lives that limit and prohibit you from really being free for love? Last week, I talked with you about one of my very simple addictions, one that isn't really very huge in the whole scheme of things, the addiction to caffeine. I told you that there's no question that this little tiny addiction in my life has at times prohibited me from love because I've been so committed to it that when I'm drinking too much coffee, my mind is clouded and I can't really be present with the people that I need to be present with. I'm speaking honestly with you. I hope that you are bringing to mind your own attachments and addictions as well. The problem is that when we are attached and when we are addicted, we are not free for love. And nothing short of a radical solution will do us. May I say that again? Nothing except for a radical solution will do. We need grace to make us free. Now, I want to pause for just a moment. It might be that you are thinking of some people in your life that you have known for whom willpower seems to have worked. Just saying, I can do it, has worked. It might be that you are that person. It may be that there has been some substance or something in your life that you have just simply set your mind to with all of your extraordinary willpower, and you have won the day, whatever it might be. Now, I'm just going to share with you anecdotally from my own experience. My experience is that those of us who have done that from time to time only turn our addictions to something else. If we have accomplished victory over this one area in my life, my anecdotal experience is, very often those will be the very same people who become addicted to their judgmentalism towards other people, or addicted to their own control and their own power. And they are equally as unfree, and maybe even more so. The truth is, though, most of us understand the other side. Most of us in this room have that thing or those things against which we have said, I will get victory, I'm going to do it now, and I will win the day. And most of us in this room have had the experience again and again and again and again, it just doesn't work. The problem with willfulness is that willfulness is this person who is created to have a relationship with the living God, grounded and rooted in God. Willfulness is this person now separated and independent from the power of God saying, I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. And friends, what I'm suggesting to you is that when we are in this place, there is absolutely, positively, never any hope for us. Nothing will do. Nothing will do but grace. I want to ask you to turn to look with me again to that passage of Scripture at the end of the Gospel of John. The horrible deed has been done. Peter has disowned Jesus not once, not twice, but three different times. Jesus has been crucified at the hands of people very much like ourselves in this room. But now Jesus is risen from the dead, and he meets with a number of different people, including on this particular occasion, alone with Simon Peter. It's in this setting that Jesus says to Peter, feed my lambs. And what may not be immediately evident is that with those words, Jesus is reinstating Peter to his position of leadership. Listen to this. This man who has abysmally failed, by means of the words, feed my lambs, Jesus has just placed him again into a position of leadership within his community and called upon him to take care of his people. It is an extraordinary moment of grace. And then, after asking the same question, do you love me, three times, Jesus says this to Simon Peter. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. When you were younger, you dressed yourself. Do you see here the picture of willfulness, independence, Peter's fiery going it alone? I think I can. When you were younger, Peter, you dressed yourself. You were in charge. But when you're old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. This is a very different prediction that Jesus is making now about Simon Peter. It's not, you're going to forsake me three different times. Now Jesus is predicting that Simon Peter is going to walk faithfully with Christ all the way to the end. So that Simon Peter, willful, failing, addicted to 100 things like the rest of us, Simon Peter is going to be so free that he will be faithful to Jesus to the very end. Did you know, church history tells us Simon Peter's story ends with him crucified upside down on a cross in his faithfulness to Jesus, absolutely, wholly faithful to Christ. I know that's not a pretty picture, but what the gospel is describing for us is a man who is utterly and absolutely changed, and the difference is grace. There was Simon Peter who said, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it. And now there is Simon Peter who says, I can't do it. There's absolutely, positively no way. In fact, I have failed in my efforts to do it. But now, by the grace of God, I am lifted, I am carried, I am empowered, and by God's grace, I will. Grace is gift. It is the gift of the power and the love of God that is poured out for all of us. Grace is reconciliation. It is when we were separated from God, living so independently, God initiating everything about our reconciliation with himself through Jesus. Grace is love on fire, passionately for us. Grace is the power of God coming to us, and grace is the only power in which you and I will experience freedom. I want to offer for you a radically different approach to the things that control us. It is radically different. That radically different approach is cooperation. Not, I will, I can, watch what I will do, I am committed, I am determined. No, 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 no. I want to point to a radically different way, not clenched, but open. And it is the way of cooperation. I want to describe for you three very simple movements, very, very briefly, of our cooperation with grace. The first movement is prayerfully express your intention. This requires tremendous honesty. It might sound something like this. Lord, through much of my life, I have been absolutely addicted to control. Or fill in your own blanks. I have been absolutely addicted to control, and my intention before you today is to no longer be a controlling person, but to work and live in community by love. First movement of cooperating with grace is to prayerfully express your intention. This is what I intend, O Lord, as one who is free in Christ. Secondly, simple surrender. Remember, this is not by our power, but by the Spirit of the Lord that we are moving toward freedom. And so the prayer of Jesus is the best that I have ever heard or have ever can even imagine. Not my will, but thine be done, O Lord. I don't know about you. I need to pray a prayer something like that several times every day because my attachments and addictions are so powerful. Not my will, but thine be done. We're describing a prayer of surrender. And finally, a third movement of our cooperation is a painful letting go. There is no way around this. To begin to move toward freedom requires letting go of the substance or the attitude or the behavior to which we are addicted. And friends, it will always be painful. I think there are no exceptions. Now I want you to imagine Simon Peter. Let's imagine, I don't know this for sure, but let's imagine that Simon Peter is powerfully addicted to being in control. He likes to be the one who speaks. He likes to be the one that directs the traffic. He likes to be the one to tell people where to go. Here's Simon Peter, who is absolutely addicted to being in control. Please fill in the blanks of the things that control you now, your own addictions as well. There's now this radical turn in Simon Peter's life where he no longer is addressing his powerful addiction to being controlled by, I will, I will, I will, but now following the resurrection of Jesus. There's this humble surrender and then a letting go. Imagine letting go of something that you're addicted to for much of your life. Friends, it will not go without a fight. Remember, I told you last Sunday morning that one of the characteristics of all addictions is that it will not go without a fight. There will be a season in which you grieve, in which you hurt, in which you long for that thing. And friends, there may be even a season in which you feel guilty because you have been doing this thing for your entire life. There may even be a season when the pushback will make you guilty for letting go of this thing. It is at this moment, if we can continue to prayerfully express our intention to surrender to the power of God in Jesus Christ, that we become new and we take real and genuine and eternal steps toward freedom. Now, I want to close with this morning. And by the way, next morning I want to speak a great deal more about the nature of this surrender, but allow me to close with this morning. One of the great insights of groups like Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and Gamblers Anonymous is you don't do it alone. In fact, I believe that so strongly that if any of you are addicted to narcotics or gambling or alcohol, we've got some information back here on the Welcome Center table about where 12-step groups are meeting and how to contact those folks, and I hope you'll take one and do that. One of the great insights is that you don't do it alone. You become a part of people who are becoming free together. And what I want to remind you is that 1900 years before there was Alcoholics Anonymous or Gamblers Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, over 1900 years before that, there was a community of people who followed in the way of Jesus. They believed that he was risen from the dead and that he had the power over what controlled them. And I want to remind you, friends, that long before there was a 12-step program, there was this thing called church. And in the first generation, this thing called church was a recovery movement. It was people who are becoming free through the power of Jesus from that which to which they are attached and that to which they are addicted. And that group, that community, is gathered right here, right now. We together, if we are God's people, are moving toward freedom. Don't do it alone. Connect with others through Christ Care groups or Sunday school classes or one-on-one meetings, whatever it takes. Don't do it alone. But please, please, do it together as a people who are becoming free. Now, once again this morning, I want to give you an opportunity to respond. As I've said a couple of times this morning, I hope you are becoming aware of the things that control you. And I hope that you're becoming aware of the power of grace. That to which you are nailed is that which you get to nail to the cross of Jesus. And by his power, begin taking steps toward freedom. So this morning, as Pastor Ron and our musicians come, I want to invite you again to the two crosses, one up here to your left at the front and one back here in the center of this aisle. If you're becoming aware, more clear of those things that control you, to which you are attached and addicted, I want to invite you to just write it down on the back of that card and nail it to the cross. This is a sign of your intention, your prayerful intention, to begin stepping in the way of freedom. I just invite you now, as Ron and musicians come, to respond as God leads you.